Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hey, Changemakers. Welcome to another episode of Changemaker. I'm your host, Zina Muzika. I am here today with my friend, Barnett Bain. He is an author. He is a producer. He is a creativity expert. He's a radio host. He's working on a film right now called Milton's Secret, which is a book by Eckhart Tolle. I think he might have some exciting news about that. And he's also an Atria author. Atria, as you know, is the amazing publisher that I work for and have published a book with. And Barnett's book, The Book of Doing and Being, is a creativity book, and I think you will love it. We're going to talk about that right now. Welcome to Changemaker, Barnett.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on with you, and hi, everyone.
Oh my God, I've been so excited to talk to you. I love talking about you, too. I think I sell you to everybody I meet. I'm like, hey, have you heard of Barnett Bain? He's got this new book coming out. I love it. So The Book of Doing and Being, Rediscovering Creativity in Life, Love, and Work. I love how you talk about creativity as something you have to do after you do something else. Do you want to explain what that is?
Well, yes, I do, because I don't want anyone to listening to think that I'm giving them life assignments. But the way
we're into life assignments around here.
Creativity to me is the process of moving beyond how I understand myself. It's the process of moving beyond what I believe about myself, what I assume about myself, my feelings, my conditioned choices, my habitual behaviors, my entrenched beliefs.
Basically, the adulthood. More,
it's adult. Yes, it's so beautifully put. It is about moving from the absolutes and guarantees, blacks and whites of being an adolescent, to being willing to go into gray areas. It's the gray areas that are the fertile ground of creativity.
And so,
we're not creative if we're coloring inside the lines.
Yeah, well, and you've done a really good job of that. I mean, I met you many years ago at an event called Lojas, and you were talking about producing What Dreams May Come. And talk about a movie that did not color in the lines. I mean, literally.
It's true. I know. I'm doing a movie now that also does not color in the lines. We start shooting September 14th.
Very exciting. Tell us about Milton's Secret.
Oh, Milton's Secret is an incredibly creative movie, and it's the story of this boy, 12-year-old boy, who takes on the neuroses of his caregivers. So it's really a movie for adults. It's a movie for the whole family, but it's an adult movie about what happens if we don't create ourselves, we will be created by others. And as you just pointed out so perfectly, see that creativity is the big game of creativity is the adulthood game. We do come in preset for creativity. We're born highly creative. In fact, when we're born, one of the renowned Torrance tests of creative thinking studies found that 98% of 3 to 5 year olds register as creative geniuses, but by the time we're 25, the number dwindles to 2 or 3%.
That's so sad.
So it is so sad.
Is it because we're just taking in so much content of other people's that we just stop trying?
You got it exactly. The movie is about that. It is really totally about that, because at the root of it is our conditioning, this layering of unexamined beliefs and assumptions that condition us to process every single thing we encounter through the head. Mm. And even though we do sense that we have other faculties, feeling faculties, sensing faculties, being faculties, our orientation is to head trip, interpret, and analyze every single experience in a way that goes totally beyond what is, people consider it normal, but I don't know. As a creator, it starts to look a little neurotic. You know, prizing IQ over emotional capacities starts
Absolutely.
To feel a little neurotic. And it has really deleterious impact on each other, on our health, and really on our kids. And that's what the movie's about.
I love that.
That's what the book's about.
Well, and you wrote the movie, but and Eckhart Tolle wrote the book.
Eckhart Tolle wrote the source material. He wrote a book called Milton's Secret, which was a children's book, and I wrote an adaptation of it that so that it's developed considerably beyond the original book. And fortunately, I'm honored and pleased to say, Eckhart said to me that he likes the script more than he likes the book.
Aww.
Not as a better than, just that it bit off a bigger piece. It's chewing on a bigger piece.
Yeah. And do you have any news around who's going to be playing roles in the movie?
I do.
Yay!
This is so painful because I can't say, and we were recording this on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
Or it's either Tuesday or Wednesday. It's a really wonderful, big, very well-known, famous star. And with whitish hair and a beard. I'm not saying too much more. And about 6.5 feet tall. But I'm not
this isn't going to air until July. Let me look. It's going to air July 7th.
So I'm pretty sure that this will be done by July 7th, but just in case.
You know what? No, no. Let's not take a risk.
Let's not take a risk. Tease everybody.
Well, we could. Yeah, we'll tease it. But yeah, it's somebody super famous, super cool, and I think it's good karma that he's playing in a beautiful film about how our children are so imprinted with our behaviors and attitudes, and why we need to be more careful as we raise them.
Yes. So when we are creative, it redounds back to our own ability to better meet the challenges of life in innovative ways. And guess what? It's the biggest gift. If we can't do it for ourselves, we can do it for our children.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the book of Doing and Being. Very excited, available through Atria, which is my publisher and also where I have an imprint, Enliven. And we have the same editor, Leslie Meredith, who I think is just brilliant. I just interviewed.
Hi, Leslie.
I just interviewed Colleen Saidman Yee, who also has a book with her. And, I have to say, Leslie has great taste.
Leslie is my hero.
Yeah, she is. And so let's talk a little bit about the book. I love that there are so many exercises in it. And when I read the book, I felt like I had found the manual for seducing the muse.
Yeah. Well, listen, you want to have a relationship with the muses. The muses, just to give people a little background, for thousands of years, artists and creators of like every kind have invoked the muses for guidance. The Homer's epic poem, The Odyssey, starts with this invocation that says, "Sing in me, O muse, and through me tell the story." And so what they're referring to here is what is known as the Olympian Nine. And these are nine distinct goddesses of Greek mythology. Now, this is not a religious thing because these are archetypal energies. There's Thalia and Cleo and Calliope and Terpsichore and Melpomene and Erato and Euterpe and Polyhymnia and Urania. And I just like to say them. So,
the fact that you can say it is pretty impressive.
That's all. It's just because I can. So these are energies. These are not literal beings. They are literal. They are consciousnesses, yes. But these are energies.
Yeah.
Everything is energy. You and I are energies.
Absolutely. And so they are big balls of energy.
These are cauldrons of energy. And they are the sisters of the cauldron. And like forces of nature, they can be called on to grow our garden of ideas and thoughts and feelings. And just to give you a sense really quickly, Thalia begins an awakening with innocence and humor. And, she says, "Take a chance. Come on. Try something new. Be willing to laugh, to stretch. Come on. Go for it. And then Cleo is the muse of our tradition. And she expands this awakening by putting it in perspective. And she'll say, you know, explore your own history and tradition. Look to your family stories. Look to what's souvenirs. Make art out of your memory. And I can go on and on. Each one of these sisters of the cauldron has energies that invoke different these different kinds of qualities.
Well, and we basically
love.
We stop listening to it, right? I mean, so many of my friends who are writers and creative types, they're always like, "Oh, I have writer's block. Oh, this and that." But creativity, you know, you are a firm believer that everybody has creativity in them. Why is that? And I mean, obviously, if we start out as creative geniuses when we're 2 or 3, and by the time we're 25, only 2 or 3% of our friends are creative geniuses, how can we reconnect to that creativity?
Well, there's a whole lot of practices to do it, one, just let's look at the word practice itself. A practice, sometimes we're aware of meditation practices, and we're aware of physical practices and gym practices and running practices. So our relationship with developing, our relationship with the muses is also a practice. And practice involves ritual and it involves technique. So one way is to establish a ritual, determine a time for your creative work and a place. And it should be a daily commitment, or if it's a weekly, you know, if it's a couple times a week, but it should be adhered to with the same sort of regularity. That if we can adhere to a regularity about brushing our teeth, which is also a practice, and if we don't do it very quickly, our teeth fall into disrepair. So if we can adhere to a practice about taking care of our dental hygiene, we can take care of a practice that responds to our desire to birth something through us, given to us through the muses, and birth through our dedication and our practice. So another one is to arrange our workspace with love and care. Another one that's a lot of fun is to connect with the chi, the creative chi or energy that's released when we move our bodies and we wake up those neural connections through rhythm. And it can be subtle. You don't have to do an elaborate trance dance or anything, but you can
So if you're sitting at a desk,
a washing machine. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day and you're not moving your body, you're basically, how can you be creative?
You can't, but you can get up and you can breathe and you can, I tap my feet in tune with the clock. You can move to the drumming of raindrops on your roof. You are participating with the world, even when we're closeted with a creative project. We want to participate with the world because the degree to which we connect with the world is the degree to which we are being fed. We are being fed by the whole. We don't want to separate ourselves off, that cortex, that thinking brain, so loves to do. It just loves to isolate. You know, that thing about the women creators I know, they just intuitively understand this. You know, I know it's not necessarily a gender thing, although it is true that women are a little more connected to their own limbic attunement, to their own emotional attunement. And so they do understand, whether it's instinctively or intuitively, that you walk a creative idea, you sing a creative idea, or you sing or walk or run or wash dishes or change diapers or whatever it is that you're doing.
But let me ask you.
Creativity is a physicality. It's not isolated from being physical in the world.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us think it has to come from our heads. You mentioned something, and I really want to deep dive into it. You mentioned that emotions, like there are two parts of the brain, and the emotions are more creative. Did I understand that right?
Well, what I said was emotions and sight and thinking are connected. They're like when I was very little, I had mittens, and my mittens had a string that went up my sleeve, around my collar, and down the other sleeve. And if you pulled on one mitten on one hand, the other hand jerked up.
Oh, that's connected. So cute.
I wouldn't lose my
They don't have those in America. Way. You're obviously Canadian.
I'm Canadian. Well, we should have these in Southern California. So the thing about thinking and emotions is they are all connected, but they don't speak the same language.
Mm.
So because when we are very, very little, we come into the world and we have this fight or flight, highly active fight or flight brain, and we also have a limbic brain. And we don't have the cortex, the thinking brain, is still in process. It's not fully matured. It takes perhaps 15 months for it to really mature. So what happens is that we have this visceral, somatic, fully embodied thing, and babies know exactly how they like to be touched, and they don't want to be innovated, but they don't want to be too far away. They come in preset. They understand their boundaries in a non-cognitive way. And then something happens. It happens very quickly. Some babies are born into dangerous circumstances, that's for sure. But lots are born into beautiful, loving relationships. But it can be so subtle. Like maybe my mom is on the phone, and I'm not getting her full attention. And to a little baby who is used to where that baby came from, you put your attention on something, and you are engaged in it. You're one with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that lapse. There's no mom or dad that can meet the needs of another human being. We do our best, but you can't meet. And so the feelings are so intense for that little baby. The feelings that suddenly are coming at it energetically are so intense that it's too much. And so babies shuttle out of the body, out of the incarnated state, and they shuttle up into this head place, which isn't fully formed yet. So they just shuttle up and they split off from the body.
Mm.
And this starts to become a pattern, and it starts to groove into our neural system, into our neuronal maps, into the way our axons and dendrites connect and wire and fire together. And it starts to make a map. And as our cortex develops, we start to make logic and reason. We then begin to give an explanation for the fact that we are always split off and out of the body. And the explanation always, it's different for everybody, but it always has something like this. I wasn't good enough. I'm not lovable. I was bad. I didn't deserve. I did something wrong. It is always an anger directed in, always.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is we spend a lifetime shuttling back and forth from the north-south axis, from being in the body to being in this disconnected, what I call thought land,
mm-hmm.
and east and west, from being in fight or flight or being in logic and reason. And the limbic attunement, which we didn't receive enough of as a child, first because it wasn't there, and then secondly because we opted out of getting it, we don't have a developed rapport with our emotional brain.
Here's what's amazing, and I don't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but I love the idea that if we feel that we've lost creativity, we can actually just be physical and, you know, and play and actually move into the body a little bit more. I think that that's actually kind of the quickest way to creativity is to dance around the house or to you know,
you're engaging that. You're engaging the lost part of your intelligences.
I love it.
We are more than one intelligence. We have defaulted. We think our entire intelligence, we call it an IQ, the intelligence quotient,
it's
a measure of our logic and reason.
Absolutely.
It's a measure of cognitive ability. It's not a measure of your mathematical ability, your physical ability, your emotional ability. It's not your musical ability. It is not your social intelligence. It's not your higher self intelligence. It's not your child intelligence. It's not your adolescent intelligence. It's not your animal, vegetable, mineral intelligence. We leave. The whole deck of cards is on the table. We're playing one card out of 52.
Wow, it's so true. And I remember when I was belly dancing, and I mean, I launched my company with belly dance tea parties because people, I noticed people didn't move. Like people would go to tea and they would just sit there. And I was like, you know, this kind of tea is just boring. And I really, I do need to schedule some more dance parties with my kids, because I do feel like, you know, I'm constantly editing books and I'm doing business and it is very neck up. I'm just going to schedule dance parties. Like, that's the answer in so many ways.
Yeah. Wow. There's all kinds of ways. There's dance parties. There's also if you just like play with your kids and yourself, imagine for a second.
Oh, well, we could go lots of places with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But we're going to go to the PG place. We're going to go to the place. Like, imagine your cheek on the warm, velvety muzzle of a pony.
Oh.
I'm thinking of my friend Waffles the donkey down at the farmer's market in Malibu. I can't resist getting my cheek on that warm, warm little donkey muzzle. Oh. So imagine that. And now at the same time, imagine your hand plunged into a bucket of hot pop, fresh popcorn.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And now,
I'm there.
So imagine, feel the textures on your hand and now inhale the scent.
Yep. Got
now
it.
Now you're firing entirely two separate systems are going.
Uh-huh.
So this is, you don't actually have to be, it's wonderful to be in the world and physical. And if that's not always available, your subconscious doesn't know the difference anyway.
Well, it's why I love reading. It's why I'm such a passionate reader. I mean, reading to me, and, you know, it's so different from watching a movie. When I'm watching a movie, all the visuals are there for me, and I don't find my, my emotional intelligence go up. But when I'm reading, I get to visualize everything that's happening.
That's beautiful. Yeah, read.
Yeah, oh, no. Oh, for everyone listening, you need to read The Book of Doing
Our
Me.
Book.
And Life exactly. by the Cup, and I'm working on another one now, and you're working on another one now.
Climacophobia, the fear of climbing stairs. It's surprising there's a term for it, but if you have chronic hip pain, it's easy to relate to. But you shouldn't have to. At the Cedars-Sinai Orthopedic Center, our minimally invasive techniques allow many patients to go back home within 24 hours and get back to everyday tasks, like walking up the stairs. More reasons to trust the number one hospital in LA for joint replacements. Call 1-800-CEDARS-1 or visit our website.
At National University, you don't just get a degree in nursing. You get a degree in
helping save my dad's life.
No! Fixing boo-boos.
Code blue, room 305.
Staying calm when I can't.
Bringing my daughter into this world safely.
We know it's not just the degree. It's the degree to which you use it. Help people when they need it most with our RN to BSN completion program. Learn more at nu.edu. National University, for the greater.
Listening to Changemaker with Zena Musica.
So you are obviously gifted in the creative field. You're a producer, you're a director, you're a writer. You've gotten to work with people like Eckhart Tolle and doing the movie of The Celestine Prophecy. I mean, you're obviously tapped into creativity.
I train myself to do that.
Okay, that's great for our listeners to know. You train yourself to be creative by...
I thought that I was going to be a dentist because I wasn't smart enough to be a doctor.
Oh, and, so you weren't always like this.
I thought I was just like this completely uninspired, just numb, somebody asked me what I felt, I would say nothing. I'm just numb. I don't feel anything.
Got it.
And, our creativity lies at the bottom of the well of our emotions. So if you're trying to rifle through the file cabinet of your intellect looking for a creative idea, the only thing you will ever find is somebody else's idea, because that's where they're all filed. So you will be first to be second. And then your ability to translate that idea, which is not original, you'll go to back to the file cabinet for all sorts of unoriginal ways to translate that idea.
You know what?
It is the emotions.
But
the
people emotions. In business, I noticed this. So I know you do business training and coaching, and we're both part of ATL and TLC. What I find with people in business is, like, when I went over and became a business mind and then I came back and had to write my book, it took me a good 2 years to get creative again.
Yeah. What, yeah. Well, because, I know why. I'm going to take a flyer at this. You tell me if I'm
okay.
on mark or off the mark. At the time that you were doing business, it's very tempting. It's very easy to become seduced into the head trip And it's not all businesses head trip, but it's getting better and better. And I personally think that business is going to lead the way out of many of the challenges of that we face as a world, because they are getting more and more attuned. But still, so much of business is conducted from the eyebrows up, and it's very seductive. We get caught up in it. And at the time that you were doing that, your practices around developing your emotional attunement, your physicality, those things took a back seat.
Yeah.
So when it was time to return to them, it was like, wow, this is all virgin material again. I forgot about this.
Well, even like creative, like it was interesting. Yeah, you're right. I was very neck up. I was in an analysis mode for so long that it kind of reshaped my brain to analyze. And I also had spent so much time sitting at a desk that I had stopped dancing and I had stopped being in my body. Like, I would go for walks, I'd go to the gym, but I was never actually feeling my body. And I think that's why so many people in business, you know, they're worried about, you know, the career choices, the job, the providing for the family. So being creative, you know, is actually, they think it's a luxury when it's actually the thing that will help propel you forward in business.
Yes. In fact, the being creative is the thing that takes us out of the ruminating. So when people are ruminating and obsessing and worrying what is happening, and this may be confrontive for some of our listeners, but what is happening is not real feelings. There's lots of franticness about it,
mm-hmm.
but they're not real feelings. They're thoughts about feelings that are being processed in the cortex. As we said earlier, the liminal brain, which is the home of emotions, feelings are felt as in the body. If I run my hand across your forearm gently, you will feel the tickle. That is not a concept. But worried about getting fired or being inadequate on the job or what's going to happen next year, these are bogus. They're counterfeit feelings.
They're
concepts about feelings. And because we spend a lifetime shuttling away from the limbic brain and out of the body, we've taken up residency in the neocortex, and we go back and forth from the reptilian fight or flight brain, I'm going to be in trouble, to how do I fix it in the neocortex. We go from strategy to deer in the headlights, and when we have a real feeling occasionally, you speak to somebody or you hear a story and you choke. What certainly happens to me is sometimes I'm embarrassed when I have a real feeling. I feel I have to apologize for it, or I'm ashamed, or I'm being caught out. And then when I look, I scratch the surface of that, I realize, oh my God, I'm ashamed. I'm humiliated. I have a belief under here that says it's weak and people will think I'm weak and that they could take advantage of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, again, all of these cultural hand-me-downs that we take on, we don't even know we take them on.
Yeah.
If you really did an inventory of how many of your thoughts and your beliefs, your choices and your decisions and your attitudes and feelings were original with you, oh my God, it's shocking. I did that and I realized, wow, I don't even need my full hand. There's like two.
I agree. You know, it's interesting too, the tension of being told you can't make money as a writer, or you can't be a successful artist, or, oh, it's really hard to become a filmmaker and actually make it. There's so much of that, you know, that we're convinced by the time, you know, and I think that's why a lot of kids that are going through college and coming out of college are feeling so disillusioned, because they're feeling like, you know, wait, there are people who are doing it, and why them and not me? And I had that. I was like, you know, my dad was always scared about, you know, me making going into the creative fields. And, you know, like our Donna Barnett, her mom, she's our designer for our listeners. And her mom was terrified that she wanted to become a designer and wanted her to become a nurse instead. Yeah. So there is this total fear of creativity, and that if you're creative, you won't survive.
You will not survive. And the reason is because people process all data and all information through logic and reason. And if you're going to take a life choice and process it through logic and reason, then it becomes a spreadsheet. So instead of having people that are emotional, or instead of having people that are connected to their aliveness and who will always find that the world always meets us where we are, we constrict and we are only processing all possibility through the spreadsheet.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally know what that's like. I mean, I think, too, that's what happens to so many of us when we wake up one day and we realize our life is disconnected to us. It's like it's, oh, my God, I think I just turned 40 and I know that's still young. Not to my son. He thinks I'm 150, but,
yeah, you're Methuselah to him.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a big, you know, the decade marks are always a big reflection, you know, a time of a big reflection. Like, what do I want the next decade to look like for myself? And I turned 40 and I thought, you know, what if I couldn't express myself or write? What if, you know, and I felt like I hadn't done enough of it. So I started taking a lot of risks with, you know, what I'm writing. I'm actually working on a fiction book. And I also had to get to the point, though. I had to get rid of my spreadsheet thinking and say, you know what? Screw it. If this manuscript never sold or if nobody ever liked it, I'm writing because it's how I talk to God.
Yeah,
there is a sense in creativity that this is my divine right, and it makes me feel alive. And when I don't do it, it doesn't even matter where it goes. I mean, I could sign it anonymous and put it up on Amazon and not even care. Just the actual writing to me has gotten so back into my bones. I've done it since I was six, and you know, and it really, I have given up on all expectations. You know, I have a great day job as a publisher. I don't have to necessarily make it as a writer anymore, but writing to me is life. And I'm so glad by the time I was 40, I figured that out.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is somebody told me, a mentor told me many, 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 many years ago to do exactly what you just said, to develop a practice and to write, and even if it didn't go anywhere. And where I go through my spreadsheet thinking is, well, what good is that? That's ridiculous advice.
Oh, I vacillate.
How can I monetize it? What good is anything? Now, this is the cortex speaking. What good is anything unless I'm going to get something out of it? And there has to be an if-then, which is, again, you know, cause leads to effect. That is the way that brain works. To thread back to the creative brain, not the brain that is just moving the furniture around, not the brain that is designed to do the engineering work, to do the second draft, to do the edits, to do the revisions, to do the refinements. That's when, you know, that's the brain that you really want for that. But the one that is going to inspire and the one that is going to choose the course that you're going to take, that's an emotional sophistication. So I hear, no, you should develop that. And I can't figure out any reason because I'm just getting my spreadsheet thinking. And I'm saying, well, I can't monetize it. It's a complete waste of my time.
If there's no money.
But it's not.
If
there's no money or there's no, here's how it works. If there's no money, if there's no status, and what's the last one? Money, status, and there's fame, right? Is that the three egoic?
I don't know.
I think those are the three things that drive the ego. Now,
money, status, and fame. Aren't fame and status the same thing?
Fame, status?
No, maybe, I guess you could have status but not be famous.
Yeah, you can be...
you can be a big fish in a small pond.
I don't know. That's a really interesting thing to think through.
Exactly. So that is okay. So the difference between the ego and the innocence, you know, my daughter's five and she sings the most random songs and she's always talking out loud to all of her, you know, spirit guides and her animal spirits. And she's always, I watch her and I'm like, oh my God, I savor it. I hope she has this forever. And, you know, and there's this ego that gets involved where it's like, don't look stupid. I got to keep you safe. I got to feed you. I got to clothe you. You've got to be really liked so nobody attacks you and kills you. And then the innocent mind is like, fuck it. I want to do whatever. I'm going to talk to, you know, Sam, the serpent who's up on the roof, and he's not really there. No one else can see him. But I mean, that's how it, there's this combination. And I really feel like they've got to be married somehow.
They do have to be married. They absolutely have to be married. And I think for children, I'm certainly not a, what's that word? Is it pedagogue? I think that's the word. I'm not an educator, but I've been around the world and that world enough to see that children sort of take care of themselves. My own child went to a Steiner school, to a Waldorf school.
Amazing.
And there was very, very little left brain stuff until they were about 5 years old. In fact, she was never taught to read. She was taught how to march letters in a field. She was taught how to drum syllables on a musical instrument. But she was never taught how to read. And then one day, you know, we used to go out to restaurants, and I would be, in my male way, embarrassed that my fifth grader couldn't read the menu. She was very proudly say, "I can't read." I think, yeah, I was such a good dad. This is where we put our kid. She's fifth grade. She can't read. But then all of a sudden, she's reading Jane Eyre. That was her first book.
Oh, and
her
she's totally brilliant.
Her first book was Jane Eyre, and she's just like shot through it. She went from zero to Jane Eyre. It's instant. So, you know, it is not for you develop the emotional facility.
Yeah.
And then the logical thing takes care of itself. It absolutely takes care of itself. But we leapfrog right past it.
Well, I think for our listeners, Barnett, I really enjoyed this. I think for all of you out there who are wanting to tap into your creativity and get back to that innocence and that playfulness and that safety in your creativity, Barnett's book is called The Book of Doing and Being. And I read it, I blurbed for it, and I really felt like you finally gave me access to the levels of creativity and to the you know, actually the actual definition of creativity, so I could know when I was tapping it and when I wasn't, and so I could be there more. So it really is a great book. It gives people permission to be creative. It gives you the exercises and practices to be creative that Barnett has honed over a 30-year, 40-year career in film and television and writing. So Barnett, any last words of creative wisdom for our change makers out there?
Be bold and be brave. Be willing to be changed by the very, very next thing that comes up. Be willing to have it change you. Be willing to say, you know, maybe I don't have to judge my own efforts. Maybe I can just flow with it. Maybe the creating itself is healing. Maybe it's changing me in ways I don't even know. I can assure you that it is absolutely changing your brain structure.
Absolutely.
And in ways that you don't even know.
And don't worry about the paycheck.
Lighten up, everyone.
Yeah, don't worry about the paycheck. Don't quit your day job if you're worried about a paycheck. But be creative.
Exactly.
And yes, I love
exactly, it. Exactly.
I love it. All right, Barnett Bain, the author and director of upcoming film. Are you directing Milton's Secret?
I am directing.
Oh, right. You wrote and directed. Yeah. Okay. Eckhart Tolle's book, based on Eckhart Tolle's book, Milton's Secret. Barnett is director and writer of the upcoming film that starts shooting in September. He's also the author of The Book of Doing and Being by Atria Books and the lovely, amazing editor, Leslie Meredith. All right, Barnett, I love you.
So fabulous. Big hug. Bye.
Bye.
At National University, you don't just get a degree in nursing, you get a degree in
helping save my dad's life.
No! Fixing boo-boos.
Code blue, room 305.
Staying calm when I can't.
Bringing my daughter into this world safely.
We know it's not just the degree, it's the degree to which you use it. Help people when they need it most with our RN to BSN completion program. Learn more at NEU.edu. National University.
for the greater.